The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media. Give us feedback on this podcast or ask tech questions by calling the voicemail hotline at 877-414-5856. That's 877-414-5856 to get your questions answered.
So, it is how many days after Seattle Mind Camp, Andrew? God. Timing is bad here.
Let's see. It ended Sunday. Today's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
2 days.
2 days.
2 days ago. Yeah.
Have you caught up on your sleep yet? That's question number one for all people who do conferences. It takes like at least 24 hours to catch up.
Yeah. I went home and decided to take like a 30-minute nap and like slept for like 5 hours and like woke up in a daze and pretty much slept until 10 the next morning. So...
Your body was just like, enough.
It was
Let me rest. Let me rest, Andrew.
Yeah, it was, you know, going full force for at least the last week. Not much sleep and, like, working 16 hours a day, trying to both get everything set for Mind Camp and also keep up my blog because that's where my income comes from. And Mind Camp wasn't really making me any money, which is something I wanted to do, so.
I totally understand that one. It's kind of like Chris and I with Locker Gnome and Gnome Dex, you know. It's the juggle game.
Yeah.
So, and this is your first year for Seattle Mind Camp.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about it. I mean, I know some parts of it. I know, like, how there was the seed from Ted and Julie, like, way back when. That was, like, in the beginning of... That was right after Northern Voice. Were you... I don't think you were at Northern Voice.
No, I don't even know when that was.
That was like January, I think. And
okay.
I remember it was either December or January, and Northern Voice is a conference in Canada. And that's how Chris and I met Julie.
Okay.
Leung, that's where she had her first session.
Presentation of her.
Yeah, presentation thing. On okay. social aspects of blogging. And Ted came up to us and said, you know, we should do something in Seattle. And I was like, that is so cool. Yeah, you know, but no, who has the time to do that kind of thing? And it just so happens, lo and behold, Andrew and Monica come into town.
Yeah.
And Andrew, you just took the reins and ran with that. Tell me about what hit you when you heard it. How did you know it was something, it was going to be something?
Well, back in January, December, I was still working full time for someone else at a, you know, a basic 9-to-5 kind of job, and wasn't liking it too much. And in February I left, and Gear Live had been my hobby for the past 6 or 7 months before that, before February. So it started in June of 04, and it was just a hobby. I do it, you know.
Tell us about Gear Live a little bit for the people who don't know about
Gear Live. Is a technology, consumer electronics, gadget,
cool stuff site.
Yeah, basically cool stuff. And I blog about different things. And I got the inspiration from Joel Johnson at Gizmodo.
Oh.
And Luigi at i4u.com. And basically, it all started with me writing for about.com on their portable gadget site.
Okay.
And I started to realize that if I did it on my own, I'd probably make more money than doing it for About, who gave like a really small percentage. So I stopped, and I had all this content I had written and nothing to do with it. So I sent it around to a bunch of different sites, and Gizmodo picked it up, and Gadget picked it up, and i4u.com picked it up, and they're based out of Germany. And the i4u guy was like, you have a talent for doing this, so you should, you know, why don't you do it, you know, you want to be a contributor for my site, or... and I didn't really want to write for someone else. And then he said, basically, okay, how about you start your own site, get your own domain. I'll give you all the server space, and I'll host you. And in return, I had to give him something like 40% or 30% of my... Actually, I think it was only 20%. 20% of my income that the site made, I gave to him, which... wasn't that bad because he was like promoting me. He gave me server space, so I was just writing. And it was
and
just a hobby.
Who was that again?
Luigi at i4u.com.
i4u.com.
I, number 4, and then U, the letter U.
I'll have to check that site out.
And yeah, so that started going really well, and the site, you know, would make more and more money every month. And by February, where I was at my job, I wasn't really liking it that much anymore. I decided to leave because of some issues that I felt questioned my integrity.
Oh.
And I didn't want to be...
Is that corporate environment?
Yeah. And I was the human resources manager. And
you were the human resources manager?
Yeah. So anything that the company wanted to come across to the employees came through me.
Mm-hmm.
And some things I didn't agree with. I didn't want to be
that person. They put you in the middle.
Yes. Mm. So I left. And my wife, Monica, was really worried that I left my job. And
that's a big leap.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when that entrepreneur bug gets you, though, you knew.
Well, I knew, but she didn't know.
And that's hard. And that's hard,
yeah. Yeah, it was hard, but so what I did was I started looking for other work. And while I was looking for other work, I had a bunch of time to just blog from home. And I started doing that, and like a month later, the income was more than what I had been making.
Oh, right on.
In a corporate environment, so... I knew I was onto
something.
And
how did that feel? I mean, I've seen the smile on your face.
Yeah,
I've seen the smile, but knowing, you know, how do you put that into words? It's like
confirmation. Amazing, because, you know, you hear all these stories about small businesses and how, like, 90% of them fail in the first year. And, you know, but in this day and age, if you have a talent, especially for writing, if you can write well with a good command of the English language, and you have a captive audience to what you're interested in, you can easily make money as long as you put the time into it. You know, writing online, blogging can be, you know, if you get enough people interested in your work, it can be very profitable.
And the majority of your money is made through advertising, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Google's part of it, but they're not the majority. A lot of people think that Google, like, is what my income is, and they're just maybe a third of what I make. So
do you actively go out and seek advertising?
No, that's the thing. Like, everybody that advertises comes to me and asks.
That's awesome.
I mean, I'm at the point where I'm turning away advertisers because it's like I have too many. I don't have anywhere else to put ads.
Send them on over to Locker Notes. We can accommodate them there.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I don't ever want to do pop-ups, pop-unders. Like,
yeah, we don't.
I mean,
do
they pay
either.
A lot of money, but it's just like I want to keep the site at a place where people won't be annoyed by it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and after that happened,
in Olympia then, or were you?
I was in Olympia.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. After that, after Gear Live took off, I started Playfeed.com, which is a gaming blog. AndrewEdwards.com, my personal site. I started blogging for someone else that hired me, Venturis.com, which I later purchased that site from the person I was writing for, and now I own that site as well.
And, oh, wow. Isn't that nice?
Yeah. And now I have, I just started TVNV.com. Which is all about television shows and reviews. So I had a blog network going. I have 5 or 6 blogs now. And we moved up to Seattle because once, after Locker Gnome was what my inspiration was. Because
Gnome Dex?
Sorry, yeah.
Gnome Dex.
What am I talking about? Gnome Dex was my inspiration because...
Like Minds.
I had wanted to move to Seattle originally, but I figured once I was working from home, it wasn't a big deal. Like, I work from home. If I want to go to Seattle, I can drive there. But then I went to Gnome Dex and met a lot of really cool people that are out here. And, like, just being in that environment showed me that, you know,
community.
Email, IMs, and all these electronic things that we have can't match face-to-face interaction. So I really wanted to be close to the people that were here so I can meet with them and see them face-to-face and, you know, collaborate.
Come and hang out, have
dinner.
Yeah,
exactly. Just like we did tonight. Like, you know, it's a big difference between, you know, sending an email back and forth and actually seeing someone face to face. So, moved up here. And I don't know anybody here. Actually, my wife and I were talking about this. So far, aside from her sister and her husband, the only people we've had over were either the people that came over from Mind Camp Planning, and when you guys came over just to have dinner and hang out.
Oh, I feel special.
So, yeah, you're special. But it's like, you know, we don't know anybody here because we just moved here, aside from my wife's sister and her husband. So,
and you guys are really active. I mean, considering you come in and you're, like, hosting this whole Seattle Mind Camp.
Well, that was the idea.
That's so welcoming and
one
nice.
Part of it was I wanted to meet people. And the other part was I wanted to make an impact somehow. Like, I didn't want to just move to Seattle and continue, like, writing my blog because it wouldn't, you know, it doesn't make a difference where you blog from. You know, you can go on vacation, like to Hawaii, where you guys are going. And if you wanted, you can bring your laptop and,
which,
you know,
I'm sure someone
right,
will.
Yes. And you can, you know, follow your work, blog if you need to.
Oh, I totally agree, but I know what you're saying. It's about community, physical community.
Right. So,
because when you match that with the blogging, oh my gosh, that's where the potential is.
Exactly.
Tapped. And so, that's where, you know, the minds get together.
That was my goal. I wanted to make an impact. I didn't know what exactly I wanted to do, but when I met with Ted, he basically said, it was after Noam Dex on the Brain Trust email group. Mm-hmm. He just kind of mentioned, like, offhand, you know, there's no event in Seattle that where people can just get together. Like, no one in Seattle knows what anybody else is doing. And when I saw that, I figured, okay, before anyone else jumps on this, I'm going to do this. So I'm just going to organize this and make this mine. And so I sent an email like back and responded, and a few other people jumped in, and I moved the discussion to the Seattle list.
I remember this, yes.
And I just said, okay.
Just jumped in.
I'm moving to Seattle on August 26th.
Oh, so you weren't even here when you did that?
No.
I didn't know that.
It was
beforehand. You were already here.
So what happened was, this was in mid-August, mm-hmm. I believe around the 18th or something like that, maybe the 15th. And I said, I'm moving to Seattle August 26th. On August 28th, let's meet and have a meeting to start planning this, because I really wanted to do it quickly before someone else decided to do it.
Definitely.
So, yeah, 2 days after I moved here.
That's right. You guys still had boxes. I remember.
The and my wife wasn't too happy with the idea that I had made all these plans for setting up meetings before we even moved and weren't unpacked yet. But you know, something I wanted to do. So I met with people at the Red Line restaurant here in Seattle. And about 10 guys showed up. And since then, end of August, each week I've had a meeting. And people have came. We've been planning. And, you know, it actually takes a lot of work. I didn't think it would be so hard to plan, like, something that was so informal. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand Noam Dex has, like, you have to get specific speakers. You have to sell tickets and, you know, get the building and everything. And this was free, mm-hmm. so there weren't any, you know, purchases involved, and there were no speakers, so mm-hmm. I figured it would just be get a space, get people, and you're done. But there's so much that goes into it, especially when you're dealing with sponsors, you make them all happy, and so
behind the scenes, people have no idea.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's literally, I mean, even Ted was talking about that. He's like, it's only so much inspiration, you know, it's like mm-hmm. 10% inspiration and it's 90% perspiration.
Yeah.
And it's
right.
So true.
That's
I
right.
mean, people don't realize how many hours you put into the planning. I mm-hmm. mean, I liken it to a wedding because it's like planning
That's true.
A wedding.
Yeah.
I mean, you have 150 guests. Is that what you decided?
I decided on 150, but people were like banging down the doors once, like Como and it was on NPR and Seattle Times and Post Intelligencer. When it started getting picked up by all those people, like, people were banging down the door to get in. So I had to open up some more spots.
And how did you decide what your cutoff number was? What made you decide
150? 150 was basically we were gonna have six tracks of discussions going, and so we divided that. And we didn't want to have like 30 people in one room and, you know, five people in another. We wanted to like keep things kind of even and small so that each session was small enough that people can have a discussion mm-hmm. rather than hearing a lecture. So if you have like 30 people in the room and one person talking, it's a different feeling than if you have 15 people in the room and everyone's talking.
That's true. It was more roundtable discussion.
Yeah. And that was actually a requirement. Like, we said, you can't come unless you're willing to share.
Right.
Like, no one can come and listen. Like, mm-hmm. everyone is a presenter. Everyone is a listener. And if you're not willing to share, then this isn't the place for you, because this is a place where everyone's going to get to know each other and know what each other's doing. And that really came off well. That's exactly what happened.
No so. NDAs. That was
no NDAs.
One.
Yeah, you can't
I love
come.
That.
Yeah, you can't come and say, you know, someone's presenting something and say, oh yeah, we're doing something like that, but I can't really talk about it because
it's all
I'm under NDA.
Yeah. It's like, so, come on, people. It's all about the collaboration.
That's
it's
right.
About getting together, talking about it, sharing.
Yes. So it's and you know, we even had a presentation on the new Amazon Mechanical Turk that Jeff Barr did, and you know, there were some things he couldn't share, but he was able to share enough that people understood what it was,
what's coming
and what's
vision.
coming. Yeah, yeah. So which I appreciated, but yeah, getting the people there and Like, just even something as simple as printing up name tags is, like, such a huge dilemma. Like,
right.
Your printer ink runs out, and now you only have half the name tags. You need to get more printer ink, and it's just, like, ridiculous. So,
and this is when you have a preset already, have a list of people, of attendees. This is not if you take anybody at the door.
That's right.
You know?
Which we had to do.
Yeah. That's
Because, you know, I mean, I actually use tickets as a way to kind of deter people from just showing up.
So, and your tickets were cool. You went through, who did you go through?
Brown Paper Tickets.
That's a local operation.
Yeah, they're
right?
local, and their deal is that they don't like do any of these crazy fees that Ticketmaster does. They just charge like a very minimal fee for tickets, and they want people to be able to like basically go to events without being charged like an exorbitant amount of money. Like I went to the video games live thing. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No, what's that about?
It was like a symphony that happened last week. It was a symphony doing video game music. And they had a gigantic like screen showing the actual games that were being played. It was really cool. But the tickets were like $40 and I bought two of them. No, they were $35 each and I bought two, which equals $70. But the final price was like $96.
Because you had to go through Ticketmaster.
Yeah, it's like ridiculous. So anyway,
wow.
Brown Paper Tickets, I thought that was cool. And a lot of people liked the tickets and thought like they looked cool. But it was a way to kind of
support their
cause. Support their cause and support someone local because it is Seattle Mind Camp after all.
Right on.
But yeah, and there was a lot of cool sessions there too. Like we were talking earlier about lucid dreaming.
Yeah, there were some cool like little in between session things going on. You and I sat and with the little
the lockpicking
101 group.
Yeah, lockpicking
they were
101.
Hilarious.
And
that
you were
was
doing
awesome.
A really good job actually. I was impressed because I could only do like the basic 3-pin and you got the 4-pin one open.
That was so
but,
fun.
But yeah, we had like people with robots and a lot of people thought it was just gonna be like tech blogging, podcasters. And what we did was we wanted 150 people there, and we actually did 50 invitations before opening it up to anybody. And the reason we did that was we wanted to be sure that we had a diverse group of people. So we specifically invited musicians, doctors, entrepreneurs that aren't into, you know, the basic things that I'm into. And after we hit 50 people, then we opened it up and said, now invite anybody you want. And that ensured that the doctors were going to invite more doctors and the podcasters would invite more podcasters, but they were only a small percent at this point because we had 50 varied, you know, backgrounds. And so, you know, the sessions range from, like we said, lucid dreaming to lockpicking to RSS to coffee hacks to, you know, social things like, you know, Julie did her thing and just,
Julie's
you know, a wide array.
Yeah, Julie's presentation's awesome.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I can't say enough about her. She's one of my favorite presenters, actually.
Yeah.
Ever since Northern Voice, which has been like a year ago. I think she's done her presentation like 5 times.
Wow. Yeah, I saw it at Gnomedex, and she actually was asking me about, like, you know, she said she's had to do it so many times that it would be nice if she could just put it online and somehow have her voice go along with the slides so someone can actually watch it at their computer screen. And I gave them a suggestion, and they're actually going to look into doing that so that anybody can see it. And
that would be so
yeah,
awesome.
That'd be great.
People would love that.
Yeah, and I can imagine like doing the same presentation over and over too. Is like,
yeah, it kind of gets old.
You know, you might have a new one. So
yeah, I think she's ready to add too.
Exactly.
Yeah, but at the same time, for us, you know, or someone who hasn't seen it, it's just phenomenal just to see where she's coming from with blogging in a different way.
Yeah, and you know, she actually mentions things that you know I didn't even really think about when I started. Like, she doesn't show her kids' faces, their full faces on her blog
right.
or in any photos because she thinks that should be their decision when they're old enough and it's not her choice to make them into, you know, once you get well known on the internet, like you're everywhere, people will know your kids if they're on there, your spouse. And so she made the decision to, you know, not do that with her kids and let them make the decision later, which is actually pretty interesting.
That is
cool.
Interesting, yeah. Because I think about the majority of our friends and that are online, and the majority of them have had their kids online ever since the beginning because I guess we're like the first set, basically, that would have kids.
Yeah.
That would be online in every single thing. So do you have Elijah online?
Yeah. I've had him on. I mean, for me, with my family is mostly in New York. I have family in Paris. You know, all over the place, I have friends all over, and I figure online is the easiest way for everybody to see what's going on. Especially when my son was born. He was born early, premature, 3 months early. You were looking at
I
the
just
pictures
saw
earlier.
Those pictures.
Yeah. So
he
it
was so
like
tiny.
He was. He fit right in your hand.
How much? He was like a pound.
1 pound, 13 ounces.
Wow.
So yeah, he wasn't even 2 pounds. But you know, it was like a scary time. And I found that blogging really let me get my emotions out somewhere, because I'm not really that emotional in
real life.
In real life, yeah. Like I'm trying to be strong. Yeah. My wife is more emotional than I am, and I'm like trying to be strong. And, you know, he was in the hospital for like 10 weeks in intensive care, so it was like, the roughest time. And if for anyone listening who's wondering, he's perfectly fine nowadays. But it was my way of kind of putting my thoughts down on virtual paper, and I'd put pictures up, and I'd like kind of have that time to myself to like crop the pictures and make them the right size. And while I'm doing that, I'm actually looking at the pictures and seeing him while he's
going
in the hospital.
Through the emotions.
Yeah, yeah, and writing my feelings down and thoughts down, and anybody could read it. So I did, and I didn't think twice about is this the right thing to do? And I'm not saying that Julie is odd for doing that, because I think she brings up a really good point about, do you want to basically put your life out there for anybody to read? And, when you do blog about something, it's not just your friends who are going to find it, because Google will eat that up. And if someone searches for the right term, a complete stranger can find, your name or your page and see your pictures and things like that. So her points that she brings up does make me think twice ever since GnomeDex about, the kind of blogging that I do personally about my life and what I want to reveal and what I don't want to reveal, and what should stay personal and what should, what's safe to put on the internet.
That's such a big question, I think about it myself. I mean, we were actually just talking about this last night, Chris and Robert and Miriam Scoble, about the responsibility that comes with blogging, because you don't always think about it when you sit down at like 2 o'clock in the morning and you just have like a rant and you're just like, whoa. But then, that changes when you see your blog up on a big screen somewhere, or if someone you don't know just walks up to you and says, hey, I read your post about blah, blah, blah. And you're just like,
oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah.
You're like, oh no, what day was that? That's not all of who I am.
Right, exactly.
And then, you kind of think, wow, these people only know like 10% of me. And how much, do I give and how much do I keep for myself?
Yeah. And usually when you blog about something, or at least for me, it's either when I'm really excited about it, or like if it has a lot of meaning, or if I'm really upset about it.
One of the two.
Like bad customer
emotions.
Service, like when you wrote about Bank of America.
I know.
Or, if someone just read that post, they might think like you're an unreasonable person or whatever. Well, I mean, I read it and I totally felt the same way, because I had a similar experience that same day.
Did
with
you
Bank
really?
Of America.
In the same
yes.
day. Oh my God.
But nonetheless, so, when someone's reading about the things you're excited about and the things that you're angry about, that's not who you are, That's like the two extremes.
It's a polarized view of who you are, yeah.
Yeah, it's because no one wants to read about our normal, this is what I ate for lunch, and then I ran these errands, so we have to choose
funny.
What's
funny. Sometimes I put that in there, too, Andrew.
Just
so
in case.
Just ignore me on those days, okay?
Your fried chicken binge and all that.
That's right. Oh, no, you do read my
See?
Blog.
There you go.
So, MindCamp was just, I can't even say enough about it. I feel like there were issues that were brought up. We talked about, I held a session about women in technology that ran over mainly into women in computing.
Yeah.
Rather than just technology.
What was your main vision when you first started that? Because what did you want to talk about women in computing, or?
My intent was not exactly what happened, but that was kind of the cool thing about MindCamp, is that I kind of was quiet and I just let the room take over, and whatever the energy was in that room, I let it become and flourish. And I tried to be wise and just listen instead of just running it and talking, to be honest. But when I came into it, my question was, how do I get more women to come to GnomeDex? I feel like there were only 12% of women at GnomeDex, and I wanted to have more women in technology come to GnomeDex, and how do I get those women there, and where are, the prominent women in technology? And it's kind of hard for me because I get this wall sometimes where people are like, what do you mean, where are the women in technology? They're right here, you know? And part of me is like, well, you know, I'm new to this. I'm coming into this business from the mortgage industry. Mm-hmm. So this is a whole new realm for me. And I'm only surrounded by a certain finite amount of people in the business. And if I don't know those women in technology, I have to be introduced to them in some way. And that was an interesting session for me. What did you think about it?
I enjoyed it. I thought that it was kind of hard for me. Like, women in technology that were there are very strong-minded about their position. Like, women in technology are a minority, as you said, 12%. So those women...
Well, that was just that we're at Gnomedex.
But I think the statistic is that even if you go outside of Gnomedex, like, that is the
statistic.
Is like 12% of women are in these various technology, or at least the computing ones, which is
exactly
what it turned into.
Exactly, that's what it came to. Computing.
Yeah,
area.
If you look at medical, biotech, and, you know, other technology industries, fields, you'll find a much higher amount of women. But in computing, it's about 12%. And so that's why you have the 12% turnover. When you go into Gnomedex. But I think, you know, those women, that 12% has to understand that generally, even though it's not good to generalize, but generally, women prefer a more social environment. And men, like, I can sit at my computer and email and IM and do those things and not ever pick up the phone and make a phone call. And, you know, just work and at the end of the day, leave my home office and go about my day. Whereas my wife, for example, who I would say is your average woman, would just pick up the phone and take care of it and then, you know, no back and forth emails. And I think that's, you know, generally that's how women are. So,
which is so funny that you say that. I have to, like, go in here and just tell you a little bit of Chris wisdom here. For him, he refuses to even set up his voicemail because he believes that email is much more efficient. There is no back and forth on the phone banter, he says, and it's all written out. It's ping. Do you want to do X, Y, or Z? The person answers back, ping, yes or no.
Right.
Women don't send those, like, four word messages very often. You're just like, hi, how are you? And
yes.
Then we go into the, we need to have some kind of relationship.
Right.
And I think you're absolutely right when you say that, you know, things need to be focused more on the social aspect in order to get women more involved in it.
Yeah. And I think that's just how it is. Like, you know, it's not a negative thing to say women prefer social environments, like, cause that's just how it is. And that's not a bad thing. I actually think it's a very good thing because my wife balances me out that way. And, you know, I appreciate that about her because I'm not, you know, I'm not the one that says, hey, let's, you know, get up and go to this person's house. It's like, I don't even think about it, but she will. And when I do, I have a good time. So, yeah, like.
And that's so true. We're talking about Monica, Andrew's lovely wife, who helped him so much with the planning of Seattle Mind Camp.
Yes, she did.
Well.
And if it wasn't for her, it would have been a mess.
And like, she did all the, probably the logistics side.
The logistics,
of things.
Which
exactly.
Sounds small. But which I thought was a small.
Oh, it's not
task.
Small.
Yeah, I just figured she'd help me out a little bit here and there. But those logistical issues are, you know, really important. I'm not that organized to where I can, you know, take care of those small things. I always think big picture.
Yeah, and if you don't do those things on a regular daily basis, to be thrown into having to do them for 150 people is really
no
hard.
Good. Yeah, so she was great. She took care of all the food, all the ticketing. All the name badges, all, you know, letting people in, people that didn't belong.
That's
so,
right. She did all of registration as well, right?
Yes.
She orchestrated
and she did
that.
A great
it was
job.
Awesome. Yeah.
So, and,
so
you
thank
know, again,
you to Monica as well
big thank
for
you.
Everything with Seattle Mind.
And that's the social part again. You know, she did the part that had to do with the people.
That's true.
You know, registration, greeting them, getting their food ready and all that. Whereas I just planned the actual
content.
Yeah. So,
and the getting the people there.
Right. And we even talked earlier tonight about how most women in technology or in the computing side are the marketers because they prefer going out and actually having the face-to-face contact about what the companies they work for are doing rather than sitting at a desk, you know, 8 hours just coding,
That's
staring
true.
At the screen. So,
And then there are the ones that are in computing that are also in the educational side. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that, like the Liz Lollies
right.
and the Kathy Gills. So I think that they are also on that line. They are very social to be people in technology.
Yeah, I mean, if you're teaching, you're in front of a crowd.
That's
and,
true.
You know, me personally, I would rather be – I don't mind being in front of a crowd at all, but I would rather just be doing my own thing.
Do you feel more focused when you're alone and just
with definitely.
The computer? Yeah,
definitely. Like, I, you know, almost too focused, my wife would say, because, like, I almost, like, don't even see what's going on around me. And she's like, if you're at the computer and there's a fire in the house, you wouldn't even know what's going on.
Oh,
because,
God.
Like, I'm
these
just, like,
words, I've said them myself.
Well, you know, I get involved in, you know, it's what I love. And I'm so blessed to be able to do what I love every day for a living and not have to worry about, you know, getting up and going to the day job that I hate. So
that's so true. It is a blessing. And mm-hmm. it's a big change in your life when you actually get to that point.
Yeah.
And things just become so much more clear of what's mm-hmm. important and what's not important.
Yeah.
So in that room, in the Women in Technology, I just have to go back to that because it's still on my mind and it has been for a few days. It's mm-hmm. been on my mind for months now. It's like, do you feel like those questions were answered in your mind? Like, where are the women in technology? Are they right there?
No, they're not right there. I mean,
and the ones that are there, do you feel like they represent women as a whole?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think the ones that I've met are very specialized.
Yeah, they're on the fringe. Like,
they're on the fringe.
The average woman is not the average woman that mm-hmm. people consider to be the average American woman. Is not represented by the 12% of women that are in computing.
I mean, those
women are really passionate and special. And again, nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying that they have a talent or a desire for something that most women do not have, because most women would rather be doing something else. How to change that?
See, I look to them. We even talked about mentoring as being, you know, a big stone that's really not thrown out that often by mm-hmm. those 12% of women that are in. Because, see, for me, I'm going to need a female in technology to mentor me in order to be able to pull up anyone who wants to go to Gnomedex. So
okay.
I need to be a person in between.
Well, here's what I see.
And that's where it's hard to ask for that and get that. From someone who doesn't really feel represented in mm-hmm. the right way to begin with.
I think you, just from what I know about you and the talks that we've had, are at the point where, again, it's just my opinion from what I see from the outside, you can be a mentor for the average woman who is not in technology.
Oh,
so
wow.
For
see,
example,
I don't feel like I'm at that point yet.
Well, okay. My wife, again, the average non-tech woman. I think that if she were to hang out with you, she would be more inclined to some of these, you know, computing technical aspects like blogging or podcasting or things of that nature versus her hanging out with a woman who's deep into that. Like, everything would just be over her head. And so if you want to get more women into technology, you need to reach the average American woman. And in order to reach anyone who's average on anything, you need someone who can show them the basics mm-hmm. and who knows how to explain the basics. Like, if I were to show my wife something on the computer, like, it goes above her head because I use
like 12 different words that
yeah,
she has
yeah,
no
even,
idea
I
what
even
they
use,
mean.
I use terms that
like
I think
Chris does with me.
Yeah. And my wife even tells me, like, she almost says that I'm inconsiderate for doing it, but it's like, I don't even
realize you're doing
yeah.
That.
Like anybody that comes over, I'll say, hey, you know, I just, you know, checked out this person's RSS feed or whatever. And she's like, why are you, you know, people don't know what you're saying mm-hmm. and you need to like break that down. And I'm just thinking, well, it's just like it's a common term to me. So I just figure people know what I'm talking about. So, you know, it's for me, like, to help someone get into the things I'm doing. I don't think I'd have the patience and the right mindset to break it back down to the really basic level, whereas I think you could.
See, for me, I appreciate that, and that's my goal here. I think for me, though, I need to be within a stairway almost. I need someone above me teaching me so that I am able to teach someone else who doesn't know, mm-hmm. you know, who might be below me in the areas of technology.
I think anyone can teach you. I don't think it has to be a woman. Like, really? Because you are the woman. Again, going back to bringing more people in, if you want to bring people in, you're just getting the basics. People that are new, people that are interested and have like a small desire in it. You don't need to go fish out the women who have been doing it for 10 years. They'll come. You know what I mean? That 12% that was at Known Depth last year, they came. Or they will come. You know what I mean?
They came. They did, yes.
Versus the women that didn't know what Known Depth was, didn't come.
Right. And those are the ones that I want there.
Exactly. So you just need anyone. It doesn't have to be a woman. Anyone that can teach you about the things you want to know, whether it's a person or a mm-hmm. book. And you take that knowledge and you find women.
And relate to them.
And relate to them. And
which I can do. Yes. That part's great.
And I think that's the way you're going to get more women into technology, is to have these women like yourself that are personable, that can break things down, and that can be more than just like a walking manual. You know what I mean?
I do know exactly what you mean. What's so funny when you say that is the way I explain RSS and the way Chris would explain RSS is completely different. And of mm-hmm. course, you know, he'll tell me, but that's not really it. You're missing this, this, and this, and that.
Right.
But at the same time, it took me a long time to learn the full scope of what RSS is.
And to the average person, this, this, and this don't really matter at this point.
How do you explain RSS?
For me, mm-hmm. I would just say it's a way to get notification, or basically I say it's like, think of it as email, mm-hmm. but for websites. So whenever a website updates their content, it'll be sent to you automatically and you don't have to go look for it. It'll just be sent to you and you can look at it like an email kind of.
That's perfect.
I mean, it's just a really basic way of saying things. I don't go into the whole...
But then when they say, how do I get it? Then what do you do? Because you're like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Then you're like, oh.
That's when I say, I'll just send you this file and you import it into your reader and you'll just have it. Yeah. You know, it's nice with the new browsers that actually have an RSS button that auto-discover and show you when when a site has an RSS feed. But like my sister-in-law, she just started writing for TV Envy and she knew nothing about RSS, so I kind of set up her reader and got a few feeds for her and just
said... And which reader did you decide to go with?
NetNewsWire. She's on a Mac. And I think out of all RSS readers, I think it's the best one, whether you're on Windows or Mac.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, by far. It's absolutely the best.
And see, for me, I never really use a reader at all. I mean, of course I use it to get the feeds.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But I don't think about my reader. To me, it's all about the feed, right?
Yeah.
So once I learn how to use that reader, it could be any reader. I don't care which.
Right.
So I have NewsGator. Mm-hmm. So now when I see a feed that I like, I sit on my arrow on the orange button, I right-click and subscribe in NewsGator. That's as much as I deal mm-hmm. with the reader.
Yeah.
So when you get overwhelmed with like
transparent it is.
25 readers...
Yeah.
It's like, how do you pick
one? You really just
one?
Need to pick just one. It doesn't really matter. Exactly. But I like NetNewsWire because of some of the advanced features that it offers. And just its layout is really nice and clean. And it's a really nicely thought out reader. Actually made here in Seattle.
Really?
By Brent Simmons. Yeah.
That's cool. Okay, so I'll have to check that one out.
It's
just
a great reader.
See.
But yeah, but I mean, really, you don't need any specific reader. I mean, the bottom line is you want to get your RSS feeds, and any reader can do that. But yeah, I mean, we're getting into more technical things now.
We are. So was Brent at Seattle Mind Camp?
He wasn't there. And we actually invited him, but I think he's like still like overjoyed by the fact that his company got bought.
Oh. So he's still on vacation somewhere, maybe?
Probably. He's probably around, but he's, I forgot who bought NetNewsWire. But basically his program that he's made, NetNewsWire, was purchased.
Oh, and nice.
Just because of how good it is. Another testament to
that's
how well
cool.
it's done. So, yeah.
So question for you. How did you come up with the 50 people that you initially invited, and why did you pick those 50?
Kind of the demographic we were looking for. We wanted to get a large number of women. Mm-hmm. We wanted to get a mixture. If I just opened up invitations by word of mouth, I would have gotten like 150 bloggers.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably would have been it.
And you were looking for more.
I wanted more. I didn't want diversity. People who knew each other, because then it would just be like, you know.
What were the percentage of women that were there?
It wasn't a high percentage. We had a nice high percentage of women signed up, mm-hmm. but a lot of them couldn't come for one reason or another. But we still had maybe 15%.
Okay.
So,
which is a little bit over 20%? Average.
That's yeah, a little over average.
Yeah.
But we went out of our way. Mm-hmm. So I asked like women like you, Nancy White, Liz Lawley, to just, you know, it's word of mouth, but invite women. And so, and they did, but again, some of them couldn't come. Some people, I mean, we had out of 170 total signed up, we had about 150. So we actually hit the mark. About 20 people couldn't make it. But yeah, it would have been nice to have more women there because, you know, aside from the women, we wanted doctors, we wanted people in aeronautics. It was right by Boeing. We wanted gamers, we wanted musicians, like Harvey Danger was there.
Who's Harvey Danger?
Harvey Danger is a band.
Oh, it's a band.
The name of a band. Okay. And the lead, I believe it was the lead singer, he came. And they were interesting because they're a band, but they put their albums out for free.
Oh.
So all their albums are on BitTorrent. And they make their money by people grabbing their music on BitTorrent, hearing it and liking it, and then inviting them to play somewhere for cash. So
they only make their money off of local people then?
Yeah. Oh. Or, I mean, whoever hears their music, because BitTorrent is worldwide. So, mm-hmm. But basically, they make their money by playing gigs at places, and they put their music out for free. And they're, you know, they're perfectly fine doing that.
Their only advertisement is BitTorrent.
Yeah. Then. And just like Adam Curry mentioned at Gnomedex last year that he played a track by some group in his podcast, and based off of people downloading his podcast and hearing that music, though, that group of women is selling out, like, you know, small stages
from that promotion.
Yeah.
That's
just from,
awesome.
And so they don't have to deal with the RIAA and all that. So I thought that was pretty interesting and unique. So, you know, even though you wouldn't really consider them techies, they are using technology to change the way people think about music. So I figured, you know, they would be a good fit. And we just wanted to get different people like that. Artists, musicians, bloggers, of course, but just a large mix of people, women, minorities, and just get them all together and, like, show each other what they can do.
What minorities were there besides me and you? You and I are, like, minorities within minorities.
Yes, yes, yes. Multiple minority is what I am. But
here.
there were people that were Indian. There were black people, there were a bunch of white people, obviously, because right. of where we are, but it wasn't, you know, you didn't look at the room and see a bunch of, like, people that were all the same.
Mm-hmm.
People from different companies, people from major corporations, people that were entrepreneurs, people that were in totally different industries, and they all had the one thing in common was that they were a geek. And what I told, I believe it was the Seattle Times, was that my interpretation of a geek is not someone who's passionate about computers, but someone who's passionate about what they do. So
mm-hmm.
if you're a doctor and you're passionate about finding a cure for cancer, I would say you're a geek. You're a geek for that.
Mm.
You know, you go to work and you geek out on what you do because you like it.
That's an interesting viewpoint.
Yeah.
Never heard it explained in that
if
way.
If you're a musician and,
I don't
you know,
think of geek as a derogatory term at all.
No, me either.
I think
a lot of people do.
Like, I do too. I get that feeling outside of the geek
yeah.
culture,
well,
I
yeah,
should
and
say.
When I was outside of it or when I didn't know that I was one, I figured a geek was like someone with, you know, thick black glasses with the tape in the middle and, you know.
More of
like,
a nerd.
Yeah, that's a nerd.
Okay.
I didn't really think there was a difference. But now that I see, you know, it's just about passion.
I think
like,
so, too.
I really love what I do. I love gadgets. I love consumer electronics. I love playing with them. I love writing about them. So I'm a geek. I'm into computers. I'm into, you know, internet technology. But that's not, you know, it's not like me and Chris, you know, are what you would define as a geek. It's anyone, at least in my opinion, that loves what they do to a point where they're willing to go talk about it and be happy, you know, talking about it and expressing it, doing it in their free time and things like that. So a musician can be a geek, an artist can be a geek. It's, you know, whatever you do, if you love what you're doing,
I like
more
that
than likely
open
you can be
definition.
A geek.
That's
yeah.
really cool. See, what's so funny for me is in the technology community, I'm the ungeek. But when I go out with my friends and not in the technology realm, like with the art friends or mm-hmm. the cooking friends, then I'm the geek. Isn't that funny? Because
I'm
is like
funny.
Somewhere I ride that line. Somewhere.
Well, that's where we go back to what we were talking about earlier, where you have that opportunity to reach people that aren't geeks because you're in it, but you're not so involved in it that you can't break it down. You know what I mean? So when you go out with your non-tech friends,
That's true.
You're the geek, and you can share things with them that might get them interested in one thing or another. Versus,
that's true, but my the starting point is always, this is so cool, you have to check this out.
But it is cool. You know, even like Robert Scoble's wife is now blogging.
Yeah, like, Miriam is awesome. Have you read her blog?
I've checked it out once or twice.
She's an English major, and she's just a great writer.
Yeah.
She's just so fun to read. She tells all of Robert's little stickies.
But you're like, I'm wondering who got her into blogging. Something tells me that it wasn't Robert that got her into blogging. You know what I mean? It was probably the women that she knew, or the people that she knew. Whether it was women or not, I don't know. But the community aspect that she saw is probably what got her into it.
That's like, interesting.
You know what I mean? And like,
that,
if Monica gets into blogging, it's totally not going to be from me. It's going to be, you know, from you or like the book club that you have, or people that can explain it to her in a way that
makes
more
it valuable
yeah.
to her.
Yeah, because right. I can't.
Because the way you see blogging is completely different than,
totally
than
different.
The way
yeah.
she would.
I see it as a business model. Mm-hmm. You know, I see
and
it
that's the way Chris does. You know, it's exactly the same thing for me. It's totally personal.
Right.
And That's the cool social aspect of it. That's why I think Julie's presentation is so awesome for women
yes.
to see. And I really do hope she gets it up online so that I can point other women in that direction.
Yeah, me too. I might drop her another email just to remind her about the tools I told her that she could use to do that. Because
that would be awesome.
I really wanted my wife to see that, but she had to. She
was
like
working.
So tired.
She was doing anything too, wasn't
and she,
she
went home to take a nap when Julie was doing that because she was just so tired, which I can't blame her for. But M. Elijah was tired too.
Yes,
so.
He had been up too with you guys like the whole day before as well.
Crawling all over the place and everything. So
he's such a good baby. You don't even really know he's there.
Yeah, I know.
He's, so good.
He's a good boy. At least out in public, he's a great baby. Great kid. At home, he'll let his emotions show a little more.
So what's your idea for the evolution of Seattle Mind Camp?
First of all, I like to do it every 6 months. If I can get the sponsorship to do that, mm-hmm. I'd be more than happy to keep that going because I think things change so quickly, especially in our realm, that yearly you would miss a lot of things that happened in between. You know what I mean? So
this is true.
Yeah, if we do, I mean, anything, whether it's computers or anything else, like things just change so fast nowadays. So I'd like to do it every 6 months and maybe do something more focused sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people said they would have liked to do more physical, hands-on things, like mm-hmm. the lock picking, or someone bought a piece of a Jumbotron. And had people like trying to mess
I
with
saw
it.
That.
Yeah, like a little tiny
people
piece of a jumbotron.
People just kind of like would go and congregate around that.
Yeah, and just see what the heck they could do with it. So I'm thinking like maybe next time or the time after we can do like a mind camp totally dedicated to like bring stuff, like to make stuff. If you want to learn how to build computers or if you already know how to build computers, you know, like you can hack stuff or build robots or whatever. And just have a bunch of different people like working with hardware and just making stuff or maybe even software, like making whatever, applications or whatever, like stuff like that. I'd also like to do, this would be my goal. My benchmark for success for Mind Camp was that in 6 months to a year, I'd like to have like some new cool service come out mm-hmm. and have the creators say, well, this came because we met at Mind Camp. And we met and we thought what each other was doing was cool. We got together next week at Starbucks and, you know, we formed our own little company or whatever. And now we have this, you know, cool Web 3.0 application or what have you.
Right on.
I want to bring people together and have them create stuff. And it would be cool, like, if I can do a conference style, like maybe a one-day conference where people came, sat in the audience, and we had presenters and speakers that created things due to being at a mind camp. That would be really cool because I want it to be more than just, you know, come and check out what happens in, you know, around you in Seattle for 24 hours. I really want it to be meet the people around you, not only hear about what they're doing professionally, but get to know them personally, which was the goal behind the 24-hour thing.
Right.
Like, no one can talk about what they're doing professionally for that long. So at some point in the day, things were going to start getting more social and less technical. People will start talking about their families or, you know, favorite TV shows, favorite Seattle restaurants or whatever. And getting, you know, oh, you like that restaurant? I like that restaurant too, you know. And then, you know, a few weeks later, meet there and go there or what have you. So I met a lot of people there that I'm probably going to get to know more on a personal level. You know, like there was one guy I was playing Lumines with that night. He kept destroying me. And, like, that intrigued me because there's no one that I know that can beat me that bad at video games.
Really?
Like, I totally destroy all games. And, like, this guy was just killing me, like, left and right in Lumines. So
the deal that I beat you tonight in Lumines me somebody.
What happened there was I was trying to watch your screen to give you pointers. But no.
That was fine.
No, he was beating me like one after another after another. And so what intrigued me was this is a cool guy to hang out with because he's actually competition. Mm-hmm. Like so many times I have people over to play games and I'm bored because I just
that's what beat, you
them,
do.
Beat them. Yeah. Beat them. Yeah, so like that's one guy I'd like to reconnect with again. And,
right on.
And the best part is that all these people, most of them are from Seattle, so they're not that far away.
I mean, the great part.
Yeah, there were some people in from California, Canada, even from London.
Yeah,
which
we were
was
talking
about awesome.
That guy. That was cool.
But, you know, for the most part, like the one thing to remember is unlike GnomeDex or, you know, any of these other conferences that happen, the people you meet, once you go home, they're still like within a 5-10 mile radius of where you're at. Mm-hmm. So anyone you're interested in getting to know better is right there, which
is
the best part.
That's value, yeah. That's the added value.
Exactly. So, you know, I want people to get to know each other, bring them together, and have them, that just be the start of their relationship. And have them come back and, you know, continue talking and collaborating and create things.
So the basics are, it's in Seattle, it's twice a year, maybe more, who knows?
Maybe more. Yeah, I actually got an offer to go out to New York and do one.
Oh, so, right on.
I mean, I wouldn't mind doing that, but it would really be more of a... It really wouldn't be for me.
Right.
You know
it
what
would
I mean?
Be a community it's around for, someone in New York.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, because this is your community and you're trying to
I'm not
going
to get to know people in New York. I mean, I'm from New York, mm-hmm. so I know a lot of people there, and it would be really easy for me to go there and do one of these versus going to somewhere like Phoenix or something like that where I don't know anything mm-hmm. about the place. So... New York is really attractive just because I grew up there. I lived there pretty much all my life, and I can get around and not have to ask people for directions and things like that. So, but it would certainly be cool to you know bring it to other cities. But Seattle is definitely going to be the home. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, twice a year.
$20.
Well, it was free.
Was it free?
Totally free.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know if it can
How
stay
do you do free.
Free. Well, that was the problem. That was really hard. I thought it was going to be simple because we had a free space that was basically sponsored to us. And I thought, okay, well, if the space is sponsored and the dinner was sponsored by MSN, then if I do it for free, it shouldn't be that difficult. But I didn't think about all the little things that you have to pay for. So we had some other sponsors like Locker Gnome sponsored, which was, you know, all of that was a great help. I don't know if it can stay free, but I really want it to be as minimal a fee as possible.
Right.
So I was thinking, you know, at a max, $20.
Right.
$29 would be like the top. Because just so that I can cover important things like having the space. Because if the space wasn't donated and if the dinner wasn't covered, that's like $10,000 right there. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't have happened. So, but charging people kind of... You know, people aren't as willing to go to something.
Oh, yeah,
if
definitely.
It's,
you have
to
really want it if you have to pay.
But, I mean, $29, cheap.
I know. That's so worth it.
And the other thing is, if you pay for something, you're more likely to go. So you're not, you know what I mean? Like,
that's
if it's
true.
Free,
that's
you'll say, true. I want to go, and then, I don't feel like going. Mm-hmm. But if you actually pay for it, then like, you are going to go because no one wants to throw money away. So that might be an advantage. But, and if... I didn't make a profit off of my camp other than people know me now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost unreal that you know, it was covered in the Times, covered in the PI.
I was going to say, how did you handle the traditional media?
What do you mean?
How did you handle it? Did you invite them or did you say no?
No, it
did
was...
Did you leave it out or did they just come?
Oh, okay.
And
the,
you dealt
the ones
them.
That actually came unannounced was Q13,
okay.
Our local... Fox affiliate here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know, let them up. And I kind of talked to them about it. It was unfortunate that they arrived during dinner because everybody was like sitting at the tables rather than doing stuff in the different various areas. But all the other ones contacted me beforehand. And like I was on Como News and that was actually a live spot.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I was on Como Radio, NPR, Seattle Times, Seattle Post Intelligencer, and then one of the stories was picked up on MSNBC like earlier, I think today. So now it's like at a national level, which I was like, originally, I was hoping that maybe 50 or 80 people would come and that they wouldn't be sitting around bored staring at each other. And instead, it turned out to be like a gigantic success. So I'm really happy about the way it turned out. But yeah, the word of mouth definitely helps. Mm-hmm. That's one benefit that I got out of it. Like my blog was linked to tons of times over the past few weeks, which helps me indirectly, but gets my name out there. And so that's the gain that I got. It wasn't really monetary. Mm-hmm. And in the future, like, it's not really a for-profit thing. It's any money that I get is to make it really cool. So, next time, if I get more sponsored money or if I charge for tickets, I'm going to put that money towards making it an even better experience. Because one person told me they've been to, the food camps and the bar camps and even conferences that they paid, $2,500 to go to. Mm-hmm. And he said this was the best one he's been to. It was the most fun, most interesting people. It wasn't dry. And, the food was great and the space was great. So, that's...
That reward is just
Yeah, it's very rewarding.
Yeah.
And it makes me want to continue to put a lot of planning and, development into it versus, some people do these kinds of things in like a week. They'll just say, let's get a space.
Do they really?
Yeah.
I could not do it in a week.
No, I think the bar camp guys spent, maybe it was 2 or 3 weeks, but they just said, okay, let's get together and do this. Mm-hmm. They got a space and they got some people invited. That's pretty much it. They had some food and stuff like that, but I really put a lot of planning. We did this for over 2 months planning every week, mm-hmm. just to get everything correct and right to make it a really good experience so that when someone walked away, they felt that, even though they didn't pay for it, they felt that they got their money's worth. I mean, your time is valuable. Mm-hmm. And I wanted them to feel like they spent their time wisely. They didn't pay anything and they got to meet these cool people and, they got this great space and great food and all sorts of things out of it. So yeah, I'm getting excited thinking about the next one right now.
I am, me too. I'm like, I'm already looking forward to
yeah.
it. Wonder what's next on the menu at Seattle Mind Camp.
That's right.
What's coming and who's going to be there? Mm-hmm. now that the word's out, it's going to be interesting to see who the next group of people.
Yeah, that's
be.
The difficult
Will
part.
You make it bigger? I'm wondering.
I think I have to. Well, first of all, I discovered that we had 170 people, mm-hmm. 150 showed up. So right off the bat, I know I can open it up to more people because some people won't be able to make it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd like to be able, maybe next time I'll add another 50 people. I want to keep it small enough that everybody can meet everybody. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there'll be a time where it's 400.
Okay.
500 people, unless it's like, again, the conference style that I talked about earlier, mm-hmm. where people can just see what, people are doing in Seattle. Now that everyone's came and everyone liked it, I'm wondering how hard it'll be next time to not have all the exact same people come.
Right.
Because they want to go again. Mm-hmm. So that's another challenge. And then I'm kind of wanting it to be like, in the beginning, it's for Seattle. Then I want it to be like a mixture. Like, let other people come.
Oh, you're going to invite outsiders.
Yeah, well, let them see mm-hmm. what Seattle has to offer. Oh. In the beginning, in the first few times, let's make it focused on Seattle. Mm-hmm. And let them get to know each other and start collaborating. And then get people from the outside to come and let them see what we're doing here.
That sounds like
and
a
like,
great
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, get our name out there, like. It's not all about Silicon Valley, and it's not all about, like, Dallas and Austin, Texas, and it's not, New York City and all that. It's Seattle, I think, has some of the coolest people here. Yeah, we just need to let people know that.
I totally agree. Mm-hmm. I think Seattle is the new Silicon Valley.
I think so.
This is, it's a great place to live.
Yeah, and not just that. There's some just really smart people here.
All together, yeah.
And even someone that flew in from California said, I'm from California, and people say, we're the tech center of the world, but I think this event blew that out of the water.
Wow.
So she even admitted that. So
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yes,
there.
I don't want to blow her spot, though. So
she was a great mind there, though, as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Andrew.
No problem.
I really appreciate it. And I can't wait to hear what's, next when it comes to Seattle Mind Camp. I'll definitely be on the lookout. Eyes
yes,
and ears
please do.
Open.
SeattleMind.com is where we put all the information. And also my blog, AndrewEdwards.com. So I'm actually going to put up a post about my personal thoughts on Minecraft, which I haven't even done yet.
Like, you know,
everyone
so
else
crazy.
Has been doing that.
It's so true. I haven't
either. Put up my thoughts yet, but I have some thoughts as to what went on and, you know, some positives and some negatives and some things I want to change and some things I want to keep.
Live streaming of The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media and Limelight Networks. Download Windows Media Player 10 to listen to The Chris Perillo Show live every Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific, GMT-8.